This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm really pleased to have in the studio with me Jody Evans. She's the co-founder of Code Pink, the great anti-war pro-feminist group that engages in such exciting activism that you probably have seen on the news. Jody Evans, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks, Matt.
I got to tell you, I've always wanted to meet you. I've been reading about Code Pink's civil disobedience and excellent anti-war provocations, getting dragged out of congressional hearings and going after Karl Rove and all the other things that you've been doing. So it's an honor, truly an honor. Before we get too deep into Code Pink's activities, I'd like to know a little bit more about you, where you grew up, how you got involved in politics.
Well, I don't think I'm involved in politics as much as activism, and that happened in 1970. I was a maid at a big hotel in Las Vegas, and I got organized to march for a living wage, and we won. And in that process, I found my voice. And coming from a very abusive home, finding my voice was important and to who I've become.
What was that home like?
It was, you know, I grew up in poverty and physical, sexual, and emotional abuse.
Ooh, that does not sound fun.
No. I ran away from home at 12. It really, I think, set the stage for my life. I then became an anti-war activist in the Vietnam War because some of the boys from my high school had died, and that really woke me up. And then got involved in the McGovern campaign, where I turned 18 a month before the election, and I can still remember how huge that was to have that vote, to have fought for it and to get to vote. And it was very serious. So voting has remained that serious for me. In that campaign, I met Jerry Brown, who was the chair of the California McGovern campaign, and immediately got involved in his race for governor and then was in his administration for 8 years, which was also very empowering because we literally got to lead the world on a lot of issues, especially on really environmentalism was being born kind of at that time. And part of my job was to run the Office of Appropriate Technology. I worked with Cesar Chavez, walked with him. So really a rich time of kind of planting seeds in my life of activism.
You were ahead of the game there with appropriate technology, too.
Yes, actually, wind and solar energy got created out of that office because we gave the first tax credits, and then that got picked up by Carter.
And then you ran Jerry Brown's campaign for president in 92, I read. I remember going to an event here in Madison, Wisconsin, at the Labor Temple, which is a very exciting event. He had really packed the hall, too, and there was a lot of enthusiasm for him right then. What was that like?
Was that the 92 campaign that you're talking? Yeah, that running that campaign. So marching with Cesar Chavez and doing the getting farm workers' wages made me realize I didn't want to be on the inside anymore. I wanted to be on the outside because I saw how crippled Jerry was on the inside, and that really took the power of the people to make that happen. So creating the idea of a campaign, which was a $100 limit, that if we don't get the money out of politics, it doesn't matter what else you're for, because it was getting bad and it was going to get worse. So it was really a campaign about campaign finance reform. It was the only issue. And what was great about that campaign is that people came from a place of value. It wasn't about power. How do we get power and how do I have power in my state? It was really they got the issue and they were there for the issue. So even though we got 683 delegates, we didn't lose a one to Clinton because they were there for what they stood for. And all those delegates have gone on to you know, run organizations in their state, to run for office, and they've stayed committed. And I'd say a lot of them are part of Code Pink. A lot of them are the core of what Progressive Democrats of America is. And I said to my son recently, who was, you know, big in the Obama campaign, I said, maybe it was good that McGovern lost, because all of us who had come there with our hearts and souls and the vision of what that campaign stood for had to then carry it forward ourselves. And, you know, we didn't get disappointed by Obama. I've seen a lot of his friends get depressed and really feel lost. And instead, we got empowered, and it really set the trajectory for our lives.
I'm speaking with Jody Evans, the co-founder of Code Pink. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor at the Progressive Magazine. Let's talk about Obama a little bit. My daughter, like your son, worked for the campaign, though she was just knocking on doors here in Wisconsin, as was my wife, for that matter. They were both very, very disappointed in what Obama has done, as you say your son was. What's your take on Obama? What happened?
I think he's a great, inspiring speaker. I think it was a perfect storm of a moment. I was for Obama in the beginning because he was the anti-war candidate and was actually speaking out against the war. It wasn't until later that he decided to make Afghanistan the good war, which is when I started to get pretty upset and actually was able to say to his face twice during the campaign, there's no such thing as a good war.
Well, how did he respond?
He said, I was thinking the Civil War, and I said, I really don't think you're that stupid, because that was about economics, really. But, you know, I said, shame on you. You know, I had experiences of him when he was a senator. I made a movie called The Ground Truth, which is about the wounded soldiers, and took it to his office and talked to him, because Veterans Affairs was one of the committees he was on. And he was, you know, when you're in the office with him, he's super inspiring and personal, and I'm going to do this with, and we're going to bring these people in, and we're going to change this, but nothing happened. So I think I kind of knew the nothing happens out of the story, personally. But I also know what it's like having been inside a governor's office, what happens when you get power. And unfortunately, you know, watching it from the outside, I've never seen a more closed presidential, you know, community. I mean, it's all really weird. It's never been this bad. And I don't know why that is, what they're afraid of. It seems to be really out of a lot of fear. And
closed, by that you mean cloistered, all of one mindset?
Yes, and elite, super elite, given who he is. Even my friend Van Jones was in the White House for a while, and stories he would tell me about how they were told to dress and how to behave, it's just not kind or relational. I think relational is the important thing. And so you think there must be a lot of fear that creates that. That's what causes people to be that way. You see that around how he is around war and how he is around Wall Street. I think they're all issues that he doesn't really have a grasp of. So he gives that power away to others. I've been in that situation. I mean, Jerry did that a bit with me. It's like, I don't want to deal with that. So he just would give the power away. And so, unfortunately, he's given the power away to, you know, the wrong people, as far as I'm concerned, or the people that don't represent what he ran on. They don't, his words and actions aren't matching, and they just seem all a little lost. They can run a great campaign, but they just don't know how to be president.
At least at the beginning of his presidency, it seems like, to me anyway, that Obama anesthetized the peace movement. Did you have that same feeling?
Well, we've had that experience before, like in 2006, when it was the peace movement that actually, it was the anti-war, you know, push that got all those new people in and, you know, really changed the tenor of the election. And then they get there and they vote for war. So, yeah, we've been there before. But yes, I think it sucked the air out of anything that any organization or movement that had a wet blanket thrown on it. You know, you kind of get thrown back and you don't know what to do next and you have to kind of rethink. I mean, that doesn't happen at Code Pink. We just kind of go, yeah, we're used to this and keep going. And we're usually all alone in the street for a while. And we know people will get back when they kind of get their feet on the ground again.
Speaking with Jody Evans, one of the co-founders of Code Pink, how did you come up with this brilliant idea, this great activist organization?
Well, it never meant to be an organization. What happened was two girlfriends, Medea, myself, and then a few others, Starhawk and Diane Wilson, we heard that there was going to be a resolution for a preemptive strike on an innocent country. And my primal scream just needed to show up in front of the White House and at least scream, this is insane.
So this country was Iraq in the time, was 2002, early 2003?
It was October of 2002. And so there we were, about six of us outside of the White House. And earlier we'd been part of a gathering I put together with a girlfriend, Nina Simons from Bioneers. It was called Unreasonable Women. And Caroline Casey had called Code Hot Pink, and we'd said we were going to be more radical to help the earth. And so when we got together to go outside the White House, when Bush was having his meeting the next morning in the Rose Garden, we said, well, we're going to call Code Hot Pink. But I looked up the website, and it was a porn site, so we had to change it to Code Pink.
I guess you did.
It was a play off of the terrorist codes of Code Orange and Code Red and Code Yellow that Bush was using to terrorize us. And instead, we wanted to create Code Pink for peace and compassion.
I also thought it was related to medicine, you know, code blue, emergency in the hospital.
No, it was actually, there is a code pink in the hospital. We learned that later. Mm. People told us that that's what happens when a baby gets stolen from the maternity ward.
My wife's a pediatric nurse, so I knew a little bit about those codes. So tell me about that first event and how things took off from there.
Well, the first day we started at the White House and we'd created a big banner that said No War in Iraq. And Diane Wilson, who's a really unreasonable woman, you should read her book. She's a fisherwoman from the Gulf of Texas who stopped major multinational corporations from dropping their toxins in the bay.
What's the name of the book? Do you remember the title?
Unreasonable Woman.
Oh, there you go.
So she climbed up on the post of the fence of the White House and hung the banner, and she wouldn't come down because she realized if she stayed up, it was going to disturb people. And it did. And the press came running and we were on the news in the morning. And as soon as they found out that she was an anti-war activist instead of a terrorist, the story just disappeared. Then we went to the steps of the Capitol to talk to members of Congress because the vote was going to come up. And we took our shirts off, put Doves of Peace on our bra, and on our bellies it said, read my tits, no war in Iraq. And we got a lot of conversations going, including with Wellstone, who was thinking of voting for the war. But for half an hour we talked to him and said, it doesn't matter that you win or lose, that if the most important vote of your, you know, tenure here is to not vote for war. You know, so he changed. And
he did. You seemed to prevail on him.
And he was part of my 92 campaign, so before he was
so
a senator.
You knew him.
I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to the hearing. And all the cameras were peeled on us because they thought we would take our shirts off again. But this time we had a giant banner. We listened to all the lies being spoken by both sides of the House and got up in the middle of it and, you know, said no war in Iraq and were dragged out. A horrible story from that experience was that Medea couldn't get arrested because she was going to go.
This is Medea Benjamin.
Medea Benjamin, my partner. She needed to get to New York to speak at an event for Amy Goodman that night. So she'd sat far away from us, but had clapped when we stood up. So Congressman Hyde said to the security, looking at her, she goes too. But Cynthia McKinney said, why does somebody get kicked out for clapping? When did that become illegal in a hearing room? And Hyde said, well, she's bothering me. And Cynthia McKinney said, she's not bothering me. And he said, well, your skin is thicker than mine. And we were all in just like mouth-dropping shock. And so when he turned around, Medea was still there and he said, arrest her. So she got arrested and we ended up walking. So that was the first day of Code Pink. And we sat outside the White House until we invaded Iraq, except for one trip for 2 weeks to Iraq in February.
I'm speaking with Jody Evans, the co-founder of Code Pink. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor at The Progressive. This is Progressive Radio. How many times have you been arrested?
I don't know.
Lots.
A lot. I quit counting.
And was it intimidating or frightening at first?
Oh, I've been arrested since I was very young. I grew up in Nevada, so I've been arrested outside the test site. I'm on the board of Rainforest Action at work, so I've been arrested outside of.
So that's old hat.
Yeah. I think some of the tactics that, you know, are at the core of Code Pink come out of my long time with Rainforest Action at work. And we use a lot of those tactics.
And part of Rainforest Action's tactics comes from a comprehension of how the media works. I mean, the taking off the shirts and having the slogans on your bras and on your bellies. I mean, you knew that was guaranteed to get coverage. So that media sensibility is part of what makes Code Pink work so well. While we're still on the Iraq subject, where do you think we are right now with the Iraq War? How do you look back on the Iraq War?
I look back and cry. especially, right, I was thinking about this recently with all that's been happening and with Libya and think, you know, all those people that we met in Iraq said, you know, don't bomb us. We're working for democracy ourselves. And I was thinking we took away their opportunity for what's happening right now in the Arab Spring and literally destroyed a country. Destroyed a country. I mean, how do you even hold that as a person who lives in the United States to think that over this last 10 years, we've literally destroyed two countries and,
killed hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah. Well, I know from living in Los Angeles, I work with gang members and teach life skills and it's a long story, but I figured out that all these gang members I work with, their dads were in Vietnam. That war comes home. I live in a city where we have a war that's killed 20,000 people. So, you know, these things have long tails. And they have long tails. They'll have long tails globally. And we've increased terrorism in the world. We're not safer. We've violated our, you know, there's no accountability anymore, which is the basic structure of democracy. So much has been shredded over this last 10 years. But, you know, just the personal of Iraq, who knows? You know, the status of forces agreement, we're not honoring. You know, so we take soldiers out, so the State Department decides to make its own army. We have 50,000, you know, private army there. And it, what our presence does in a country as an occupation is criminal, and we continue to do that, and the amount of money it takes away from the needs of our own communities here in America, it's just devastating. When you said, I just want to cry and scream.
Now I can see it in your eyes, Jody Evans. You mentioned Libya. I mean, to me, the takeaway from the corporate media and from the Obama administration and from the establishment is this was a success, and it seems to me Obama set a precedent for, you know, attacking any country he wants and not going to Congress and totally violating the War Powers Act. I mean, that's pretty shocking from someone who a lot of people thought was a peace candidate, don't you think?
Shocking. And again, that long tail. You have no idea the price we're paying for things like this. The price we're paying, you know, when our laws get violated this badly, what door does that leave open and what does that look like? I mean, for me, it's even going back to, you know, the Contragate, that, you know, we pushed really hard on Clinton to hold these people accountable. And now they've done this. And now they've done this. You know, it's like, what is the next horrible thing that comes through that door that hasn't been closed?
And that comes from a lack of accountability,
yes.
As you're saying. It's impunity from Bush and Cheney and Rove and Rumsfeld.
It's an arrogance of power that the founders of this country understood really well. And that we, you know, are not holding that piece of who we are as a country, that we banter around this word democracy, but instead we don't do the tenets of democracy, that's not going to be pretty.
Yeah,
it's already horribly ugly, but we don't really sit in that ugliness.
So it's not only an enormous scandal that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld weren't held accountable for torture, it's going to drown us in its wake.
Oh, absolutely. Not only that, what, Cheney is now coming out and just proud that he would still waterboard? He should be in jail for that. And instead we get to watch the news where he just gets to banter about it?
Yeah, now he hawks his book.
I mean, why are the police not in there arresting him? I don't understand. Other countries understand. He can't go anywhere else but America.
Let's talk about the Afghan War. We're getting on the 10th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan. Some feminists, it was a tough call because of just the brutalization of women under the Taliban in Afghanistan. What was your take on it at the beginning? What's your take on it now, Jody Evans?
I was against it from the beginning and still against it. I've written a lot about how women have been used. for this war. Like, we're there for the women.
And Laura Bush was all about that.
Nothing good has happened for the women. And the only women that really benefit are the ones in Kabul, because that's where we kind of, it's really a little America where we've kind of taken over. But what that does to the whole community and to the country, I mean, the Taliban has increased. It's got tons of power in the country. When you talk to women who are in Taliban controlled areas of the country, they want us out because it keeps the violence. Tent living, I mean, just feel what it is to be in Afghanistan, which is, you know, 30 years of violence and war. They want it to end. I just recently spoke to one of our friends in Afghanistan, and she's said, and now they continue to train more military instead of police. What we need are police. What was needed from the day one was police to go after. It's a police matter to go after Al-Qaeda. It is not a military matter. And they even teach that in the military. So to go and create, you know, the destruction and war and violence on this country, it's always on the backs of women and children. I mean, that we've, the drones in Pakistan, 99% of who's killed are innocent civilians, that we've come to a place in this country that that's okay. It's not okay. Hmm. And,
It's remote control war too. Excuse me.
I'm outside of Creature Force Base as often as I can. I don't know how you describe to Americans what is happening in our name and what that means to this ancient Pashtun tribe in the middle of nowhere. The extreme violence that is. We have to end what we're doing in Afghanistan. We continue to increase the Taliban's power. We continue to destroy the fabric of the Afghan society. When we show up in these countries, the corruption that we bring, I remember one day in Kabul just thinking, this is the road to hell writ large. It's, you know, good intentions, but none of it landing. You know, I understand we want something good to happen there. Maybe it's our arrogance. We have to get out of there and really help the people, really help the women, give them what they need. We don't even ask what they need. When you're there, it's like, I even talked to the woman who's the head of the USAID. She's even frustrated because she can see it. But the way we create the structures and our laws, we can't actually do it. There's like a wall between our intention and the need of the Afghan people.
And are you worried at all that if the United States pulled all its troops out, the Taliban will just conquer the country and brutalize women more?
Well, see, our problem in America is we look at things in black and white instead of grays and gradations. You can pull the army back. You could pull it all back to Kabul. You could, I mean, all the money that we've spent, $3 trillion on war in the last 10 years, if that money was actually spent in the community, actually enriching the community and educating and the infrastructure and creating healthy communities and taking people out of poverty and doing what the Taliban does is by creating accountability and by feeding and taking care of the people, we would, the need for the Taliban would evaporate. If we could actually educate the women, as some NGOs have been doing successfully, the Taliban wouldn't be what the Taliban is.
I'm speaking with Jody Evans, one of the co-founders of Code Pink, an incredible activist organization, Code Pink, that has engaged in great civil disobedience and raised issues bravely when no one else was taking on those issues, it seems, and still doing so. A big event coming up is October 6th in Washington, D.C. Jody Evans, tell me about that.
Well, at Code Pink, we were trying to figure out how to deal with this as we come to this 10th anniversary. And so, people numb from being at war for 10 years. So we have something called Create Not Hate right now, which is working with artists, theater, visual, to work in the communities to get people to feel, what has this last 10 years at war cost you? What does it cost you? What does it cost your community? What's it cost the country and what's it cost the world? Something that helps you feel about it. Because too much, we're talking about it rationally, this irrational thing that we think we can grapple with rationally. And so really getting people into their feelings. And by doing that, hopefully creating a greater community of people actually thinking and feeling about this, and then coming together either on October 6th in Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C., or creating your own locally to say, no, this isn't okay. It's not okay for the world. It's not okay for our country. It's not okay for this community that's paid for it. And it's not okay for me as an American citizen. And taking a page from the Arab Spring and standing in these squares until we hear change happening.
So as far as the Washington, D.C. aspect of October 6th, what do you envision?
Well, I envision that we stand in that square and we come together and it just continues to grow. And not only continues to grow in that square in D.C., but continues to grow in the squares around the country. It's time. You know, it's moved from, the Middle East to Spain to England. It's ready to happen here. And we've been inspired by what's happened in Madison around the country. And it's ready. We need to stand up and grab that, because what's happening is outrageous. And sitting on it isn't helping us. Expressing it is what's necessary.
That's for sure. And people who can find out more, is there a website they can find out more about October 6th?
CodePink.org.
Well, that's easy enough. Now, you've mentioned, we've got a couple minutes left, the Arab Spring a couple times. And tell me about the leadership of women in the Arab Spring.
Well, what's been inspiring about that is that it was a woman both in Egypt, you know, in Bahrain. We have a young woman who's been leading MideastYouth.org. Check it out. What they're able to do, engaging, inspiring, you know, a woman who speaks on YouTube and says, join me in the square, and inspires her fellow Egyptians to be in the square. And Medea Benjamin, my partner, was in Tahrir Square. And she said it was so inspiring to see the fierce and feisty leadership of the women in the square. So it really has been inspiring for women globally to watch women lead these uprisings.
Yeah, I heard in an interview you say women are really coming into their own right now. And do you see it here in the U.S.?
Yes, you know, it was just the 40th, they just did a film on Gloria called Gloria in Her Own Words, and it was 40 years of Gloria Steinem. And we have a thing on Women's Media Center right now asking women, what are you going to lead for the next 40? And as we speak to women, they are feeling, you know, they stand on the shoulders of so much, but really starting to feel all the seeds that have been planted. The soil is rich. Their skills and their voice are strong, and they're ready to step out and move us further.
Jody Evans, you mentioned the Women's Media Center. You're chair of the board. Tell me about the bias in the mainstream corporate media against women. We only have a minute left.
97% of the decisions in media are made by men, and we need to make the female half of the world more visible.
I mean, 97% that's produced, decisions by producers and directors.
And owners of the stations, yes.
And then representation also on op-ed columns, on these talk shows on Sunday morning and all these other things are largely dominated by men, too.
Well, and over our last 7 years of being around, we've been able to move that a little bit, and Rachel Maddow has credited the Women's Media Center with getting her job.
Well, that's one accomplishment of many by this great organization, Code Pink, that you're the co-founder of. Jody Evans, thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio. I got to tell you, it's been a real thrill to meet you and have this opportunity to talk with you. Give us, it's just codepink.org. So go there, find out more information if you've been listening to this show. You've been listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor at The Progressive Magazine. Thanks again, Jody Evans.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.